Hello, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management weekly podcast, where we discuss some topical leadership issues. This week, we're focusing on events up to the 30th of November 2018. My name's Nick Scott. I'm an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management. And as usual, I'm joined by the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Nick.
Our first story focuses on well-being at work. This week, dozens of employers and public figures pressed Prime Minister Theresa May to implement a manifesto commitment to amend health and safety regulations. Their open letter requires places of work to make provision for mental well-being as well as physical health, with calls to equalise the number of mental health first aiders with the current provision of recognised physical first aiders. So, Kate, should mental health and physical well-being be taken together?
We should, of course, be including mental health in the same category as physical health, bringing it under the same umbrella and it being a holistic approach to well-being at work. And that's indeed how we consider it at the Institute. I think first aid is when you come, when there's an accident or a trauma or something's happened and immediate attention is needed. And what the aim of any effective health and safety policy is to avoid the situations where you might need first aid. So, of course, you have people trained to be able to be those first responders. But the whole focus, of course, of the policy is prevention. And that should be exactly the same with mental health first aid. People's problems outside work can undoubtedly contribute to their mental well-being, and of course you bring your whole self to work. So it may be, of course, that situations do become a crisis.
And in these situations, can anybody help, or are we looking for specialist support?
We encourage everybody to attend appropriate training, to understand that essentially it's about having time to talk, to not judge, to listen, and to be able to refer people to professional help if necessary. So I'd rather the focus wasn't on first aid fixing a crisis, but would be about preventing the crisis occurring and not making it the remit of a specialist few, but to encourage everybody to talk about mental health problems in the way we're so much more inclined to talk about physical ones.
American fast food outlet Chipotle hit the newsstand this week when it fired a manager who had refused to serve a group of customers unless they could demonstrate the ability to pay. The manager knew that this same group had previously eaten and left without paying the bill. The initial media storm arose when one of the customers posted a clip of the event on Twitter, which led to Chipotle and the manager being accused of racism, with the net result that the manager was fired. Soon after that, however, other Twitter users revealed these same customers had previously boasted on Twitter of stealing food from restaurants, and amid accusations of wrongful dismissal, Chipotle backtracked and offered the manager their job back. Chipotle has clearly made some mistakes here, but how can an employer recover from an event such as this?
In this sort of situation, what's happened that there's been a breakdown of trust, and it's that trust that needs to be fixed. So the breakdown was the employee in this instance not being believed, knee-jerk reaction or action taken without a proper investigation, later to found that the trust in this case had been misplaced and that therefore making amends. So actually, I think the very fact that being offered the job back shows that there's an intention to fix these things. But as we find, trust is so easily broken and takes so much longer to rebuild. But it can be rebuilt. And of course, one of the starting points for this, and I think it's something we've talked about before, it's to have that first absolutely honest conversation, which is a genuine and a heartfelt apology to evidence that this won't happen again, because there's something about the person who's been wronged feeling, well, at least some good has come out of that, because in future there would be a far more thorough investigation. And then to think, to ask the person, what can we do for you to trust us again? What will it take? And it can be done. I think it's just, it's slow, and it takes that real willingness to accept wrong, to apologise, and to do things differently in the future.
Our third news item originates in the Harvard Business Review, where organisational behaviour expert Professor Herminia Ibarra highlighted the stress managers feel when changing jobs, referring both to separation anxiety and a loss of sense of identity. So, Kate, where do these feelings come from?
Power and influence are under constant negotiation in organisations. They ebb and they flow, and a huge part of that is the role that an individual has in shaping the future. So when somebody's leaving an organisation, they're not part of the future of that organisation, and of course their power and their influence will ebb. And this is really difficult for people when they've felt important, they've felt significant, and all of a sudden they're not part of what's happening next month and next year.
So has Ibarra identified the right issues?
We know how difficult change is, and on an individual level, it's often to do with identity. So we have to forget, in a way, what we used to be. We have to formulate what we'd like to be, and we have to adopt that and, in a way, sell it to the people that we're working with. And this is very stressful, because forming new relationships with many people, different contexts, different culture, will take its toll. This is going to be difficult. How can I find the support I need to get me through this? And an obvious answer would be a coach, somebody who's going to listen to help you navigate your way through this changing identity. Get to know the people. Most importantly, ask questions and listen to the answers. Don't tell people what you used to do in your old organisation. Ask them what they're doing now in their organisations.
And finally this week, Kate's been away in Europe, finding out more about employee engagement.
Yes, I was invited to chair the Holistic Employee Engagement Conference at the Imperial Riding School, Vienna, and heard from so many different engagement experts who were sharing the real difficulties that they've had in improving engagement. A recurrent theme was how long employee engagement surveys aren't engagement exercises. Action plans that are forced upon people by HR departments zealously trying to improve engagement in using existing systems and processes aren't the answer either. Coca-Cola has reduced their engagement survey from 127 questions that used to take 25 minutes to 23 questions that now take 5. Foodspring, an internet nutritional providers, rapid growth, the average age of their staff is 28. So how do you keep young people engaged, driven by the purpose of the organisation, trying to develop the values that make sense for everybody, but also ensuring that a high level of performance is maintained through these periods of rapid growth? I think the overwhelming finding that was shared by everybody is that we too readily confuse employee engagement surveys with employee engagement. It's what they lead you to, and invariably, if they lead you to local solutions that have been created by managers and their teams, which make sense for them in their situation, then you will get better engagement.
Well, thanks very much for that, Kate. That's all we've got time for this week. Please go to the website www.institutelm.com for more information about the Institute of Leadership and Management. And please subscribe to this podcast series.